Hello, Tom, up in Sydney, I believe.
Yeah, up in Sydney, coaching some cricket up here, Rowan. How's the weather down in Melbourne?
Oh, it's beautiful, mate. You should never have left. How is it there?
Yeah, it's actually really nice. Nice day for cricket up here, about 28 degrees. It's a good day for batting, I would have thought.
Well, look, where do we start? I guess we start with the one day yesterday and pretty ordinary performance by the Aussies.
Very ordinary performance. Yeah, it's interesting listening to Steve Smith after the game. He said one thing which really sort of took my gaze. He said that the Australians probably went a little bit hard early with a bat, but they've now made that mistake two games in a row, and it was only Matthew Wade that got them out of jail in Brisbane. But it seems like we're batting to make 350 or 370, when in fact a lot of these Australian decks is not actually possible, and 280 or 300 is more than enough, as we saw in Brisbane when we got 250-odd. So we're looking to bat as if we're going to make 300, and in the end the Pakistan spinners just spun a web around us, and we're bowled out for 220. It was a disappointing performance, but I guess from a neutral perspective, it makes the series a more interesting one ahead of a game in Perth, and we go to Sydney, then Adelaide to finish. So it's going to be a really intriguing next three games.
It reminded me of an older style 50-over game. Yeah. In just Australia, and I guess it was an overcorrection of sorts, but so many of those middle overs spent just knocking around the ones and twos before the attempt at a flurry at the end. And lower totals too at the MCG. I mean, look, I don't have the figures handy, but I'd suspect that lower totals in 50-over games at the MCG have been the order of a day over a long period of time.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, so much is made of the drop-in pitch, but it's also a very big oval, and we know that. So, especially square of the wicket, it's very hard to hit sixes. But, yeah, the 230, 240 is probably about the average over the last few years there. It's a two-pace deck and can be a little bit slow. And we've seen with the Australians playing against other teams, when the other teams have spinners, like they did yesterday, who can bowl between overs and 30 and 45, it's very, very hard to score. It doesn't matter who you are, Steve Smith, Glenn Maxwell, they all struggled against those spin, and there was nothing we could do. The MCG is a different kettle of fish to the WACA. I expect the WACA to be a 300-plus ground, and it has been a high-scoring ground in the BBL so far this season. But perhaps you're right. It was an old-style game, and 220 in the end wasn't enough. Maybe they should have settled for 240 or 250 rather than looking to go and get 320 at the start.
Obviously, the most significant news of the day, the announcement of the 16-man squad for India. A little bit of controversy. I guess there is about every touring party, really. There's always, people unlucky to miss out. Hilton Cartwright basically discarded after one test. Four spinners. I must say I was in the Dean Jones camp on this one, that we might have been better off picking our best bowlers, regardless of whether they were pace or spin. Pat Cummins is the one I'd like to get your opinion on. I mean, I know Dino feels this as well, that at some stage you've got to take him out of cotton wool. Now, they can say we want him right for the Ashes series, but why is the Ashes series now any more important than this tour to India in terms of our cricket credibility?
That's a great question. I think probably most Australian fans would agree that the Ashes is number one, but it's closely followed by India. The issue with Pat Cummins, though, in isolation, is that he hasn't played a Shield game in years. So I'm not sure it's about as much about cotton wool as it is about fixturing. Because he hasn't been able to actually get on the park and play red ball cricket. So I reckon, had the BBL not existed, it's a big if, obviously, then he would have potentially been going to India, because he would have got some miles under his belt and being able to bowl some red ball cricket. But he wasn't able to do that. He's been playing four overs, bowling four overs a night, and hasn't been available. So I agree that Pat Cummins needs to come out and play, but I also think they've done the right thing, because he needs to play Shield cricket first. And but there's a tour to Bangladesh later this year. Maybe that's the one where he jumps on board after playing a few games in New South Wales.
It is an incredible anomaly, isn't it? And I know we've spoken about it a lot, particularly this summer, but we keep hearing from Cricket Australia that Test cricket is the priority, and yet you've only got to look at the scheduling and the commercial priorities to realise that that just isn't true, because if it was true, Pat Cummins would have been playing first-class cricket.
Exactly right. No, Cricket Australia has sort of backed themselves into a corner here, because on one hand, and you don't, In many respects, I don't really blame them, because there is commercial realities to do with it, but they back themselves into a corner because they keep talking about Test cricket's the priority, Test cricket's number one, but then if it was, would you really be going to New Zealand for a three-match one-day series 3 weeks out from a tour to India? How is that necessary? And there's all these, financial imperatives that need to come into account, but I think most Australian cricket fans would agree it's gone overboard, and they need to peg it back a little bit and actually simplify it a little bit. Three one-days against New Zealand in December, not required. I understand why they did it. It was a payback thanks to the pink ball. Then three one-days against New Zealand, over New Zealand in February, also not required. So if they can just peg it back a little bit and get it right with the scheduling, then I think that Test cricket will again be number one. But the fans might see it differently as well, because I know, and you know, I'm sure, Rowan, you watch the TV and the kids are loving the Big Bash.
Yeah.
There's not that same passion for Test cricket. But it was probably 15, 20 years ago we were saying, oh, Test cricket's a dying breed as well. I think Test cricket will endure in Australia, England and India. The real worry is South Africa, West Indies, Bangladesh, New Zealand, these countries that don't have that financial backing that we do. That's where Test cricket's struggling, and it's going to continue to struggle until the ICC fixes the scheduling and fixes a number of issues around the game.
Yeah, I think another potential long-term issue too is, and I agree with you entirely about the Big Bash, and look, I love it, don't get me wrong, I really love watching it, but I watch it more as entertainment than with a real emotional attachment to this team or that. And it's also essentially a domestic thing, isn't it? The international T20 games haven't been a priority. So if, you know, 10 years down the track, the kids have all grown up with Big Bash, and yet it's not really an international game, where does that leave us?
Well, it leaves us in a position a little bit like what soccer is. And soccer's become that way, or it started that way, I guess, because of club football or soccer being so strong. And what you'll see is a number of breakaway T20 leagues all around the world, each one with significant financial backing and players travelling from place to place, and really playing for your country becomes a secondary thing. We've already seen with AB de Villiers at the age of 32, it's been reported that he actually might retire from Test cricket, which would be a real shame.
Yeah.
But honestly, who can blame him? Because so much money to be made in T20 cricket, and it's so little stress on the body compared to Test cricket, and there's more fans watching. If you tick all the, it actually ticks all the boxes from a player's perspective. So yes, he's played 106 or 104 Test matches, AB de Villiers, but he's been there and done that. I can see why he's doing it. It's from a traditionalist perspective, it's not good, but it is the reality. The next 5 years are going to be huge for Test cricket and international cricket in general. I really don't know what's going to happen. The ICC needs to make a decision, and it needs to move away from being a members board where every vote has a bias attached to it. It needs to be an independent body which makes decisions for the good of the game and not with the Indian Cricket Board or Australia or England in one ear.
Yeah, well, good luck. I mean, that's sort of wishful thinking, isn't it? I mean, we've been talking about the World Championship of Test Cricket, I reckon, for 20 years now. I've never seen a sporting body which moves at more glacier-like speed or lack of speed than the ICC.
They're shocking, aren't they? It just doesn't. They don't do anything at the moment because they're hamstrung by the financial bigwigs of India. Now, I hope that the fact that the president of the Indian Cricket Board is being charged for perjury changes that, and they can actually get going and do something. But you're right, the World Test Championship was actually ticked off and approved. I think it was about 2008 for a 2012 start, then nothing happened. So this whole notion of Test cricket is just floating along, as you said, like a glacier. And it's not moving, it's not evolving, and the only thing that's keeping it afloat at the moment is the traditionalists that are pumping money to it from the back end. But really, it's got to do something, otherwise we could be in a bit of trouble.
Well, once we all die, Tom, which in my case, fortunately for you, will be a lot sooner than you do.
Well, you're a healthy man, right? I think you're doing some exercise around the place. I'm not sure about that.
All right, thanks for joining us, mate. Talk to you soon.
No worries. Thanks, Ron.